All right. How you doing, people? This is Chris from Don't Let Them Burn. I'm here with Through the Black and Don't Let Them Burn.
Representing.
Yeah, so tonight we're going to be talking about the Blade Runner 2049 and the original movie. And so we're waiting on my partner Rory to get in here. But until then, you can reach us on don'tletthemburn.com. You can reach us on Twitter. You can reach us on Facebook and some other social media platforms, even Reddit. So if you want to reach out to our website first. But definitely subscribe, like, share, people who want this information, you know, so they can get it. And let's get started. So we have this movie Blade Runner here. Let me see if I can share my screen. We got 9 viewers in the room.
Have you watched it? Oh
yeah, I watched both of them today.
Oh, you watched them back to back.
Yeah. And I took down a whole bunch of notes. Let me see what's going on in the chat room here.
There's this guy Chad in there, he's a troll. You might need to block him. He's a secret Satanist.
Yeah.
It'll start filling up with some characters, I'm sure.
All right, I can't even see. It's not even showing up right now. But I think it'll refresh him. Okay, Rory Brown is on the mic. Let me see. How can I do that?
Well, I hope your show is as big a disaster as our show. That way it makes me feel better to go through this.
Hey, Rory, you there?
Hey, what's up?
What's up? We just started the show, so... you said 1 second?
Yeah, trying to get in.
All right, so in the meantime, you know, this movie came out, the first one came out in 1982, and it's made by Ridley Scott is the director. Now, Ridley Scott is basically a dude that's, you know, weird. He believes in aliens, and he has all sorts of philosophies going on in his head that he puts out in his movies. Now, he's not always the writer, but as a director, you have to approve the scripts. And so these movies have all sorts of things that are going on in the real world. But this was the first Blade Runner is 27 years removed. It was the events in the first Blade Runner happened in 2019.
Yeah, that's what's crazy, man. That's when I didn't realize that until a few days before I watched it. Somebody else was talking about it, and they brought that up, that movie was set in 2019. So there's a lot that's got to happen this year for that kind of vision to be pulled off.
Yeah, exactly, because they're talking about space mining and stuff like that with the what's called a replicants. And, let me not get into too much of the deepness of it. But the second one is 32 years removed from 2017 to 2049. Now, what's significant about that is the transhumanism movement and the globalist movement, the year that they want everything to happen is between 2030 and 2045.
Yeah,
and they've pushed the clock back. Rory, you got anything to say about that?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm trying to get on video, but for some reason I'm not. But anyway, yeah, it was a rather different movie.
Well, don't talk about the second one yet. We're gonna go through the first one first, and I know you didn't get a chance to watch it, but it's okay. It's cool. So what struck you as weird or what raised your red flags for you in the first movie?
Okay, well, let me just preface. I saw this movie a long time ago, and a long time ago for me was like mid-1990s, and I had no idea what I watched. I didn't like it the first time that I watched it. But what I was told initially after watching it the first time was that there were actually colleges that had academic courses, like entire classes that revolved around the philosophy of Blade Runner. And I was introduced to this idea that Blade Runner had philosophical themes running in an undercurrent that spoke to sort of like, a larger idea. And that intrigued me. I had never thought of movies encapsulating philosophies that spoke to different topics. You know, it was my first time as a kid where I was introduced to that as a possibility in movies, that it could go deeper than most of the stuff I would normally watch, which was normally just cartoons You know, so that was my introduction to, a larger world of philosophical thought. And as I got older and more interested in science fiction and stuff, primarily philosophy, as I got interested in philosophy, transhumanism wasn't so much on my radar at the time, but I was able to rewatch Blade Runner with a fresh set of eyes. And I saw sort of a creator-creature battle, you know, that took place. I could see a little more of the symbolism where you had a man, where you had the creator and the creature at odds, the creature upset with, not having immortality, so to speak, or wanting more life, and then simply going after the creator in a violent fashion in a fit of anger and ultimately killing his creator. And I saw spiritual themes there. I think that was the first time when I watched it, I really recognized that there was a spiritual undercurrent to the whole premise of the film. And then later on, you know, when you see it again later on in life, and, you know, at that point I was definitely more clued into a lot of these different ideas. You know, philosophically, it went even deeper with the question of what is human, and then seeing the idea of humanity being able to create life in some capacity, and, you know, just watching all the characters. There was so much that went on in the first movie that I'm stammering all over myself as I try to articulate it. It really was just, to me, much deeper than most people give it credit for on all kinds of different levels, you know, all kinds of different levels, especially when I realized that it was loosely based on Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And that was, you know, so that's pretty much just it in a nutshell. I realized there was a lot more going on behind the scenes of Blade Runner than what most people realize when they watch it and consider it just to be a classic sci-fi film.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, most of the movies that we watch today are all drawn from Philip K. Dick or other sci-fi writers from way back in the 20s. And, you know, when I'm watching this morning, see, okay, let me backtrack a little bit. I was a little kid when this movie came out. Okay, so everybody knows that I'm pretty much older now. So 45. And, you know, I didn't get none of it. And I used to like a lot of sci-fi back. So it's a physical, the psychological aspect and the philosophy and Brain Runner, I couldn't grasp those concepts as a kid. So now when I'm watching it today, I'm like, okay, these replicants or AI humanoid beings, they want to learn about morphology and longevity of life. So here it is, like, okay, your creator God, not our God, but the guy that created all the robots, you're after him to gain the gnosis of how to live forever. And I was just like, okay, this is a metaphor for man too, because the sin of man perpetuates us to want to live forever. That's why God kicked us out of the garden, because we would have lived forever. The Bible says that, you know, so all these things combining and seeing what they're trying to do, and we'll get to it in a few, what they're trying to do in real life really puts, I mean, it blew my mind the articles that I'm pulling up, even though I knew some of it was going on already. Now, one of the things that they introduced in this movie was sex bots, and we'll touch on that a little bit more too. But and then the fake memories, they're implanted with fake memories. So you know, you'll see Harrison Ford testing them, or the young lady, not the young lady, but the young robot that eventually he falls in love with. I see Masonic symbolism in around this cop character. You have the tech in this movie was years ahead of its time, but how do these writers come up with this stuff? You know, they don't know how to tell the future. And when you look back in some of their writings and some of their biographies, you'll see that some of them were contacting demons, but that's not either here nor there for now. Rory, what do you have to say about what we're talking about right now so far?
Well, this is the first movie. I didn't get to watch the entire first movie. I watched the second one. But I think that the themes are basically the same from what I've seen. I can't even remember Blade Runner. I did see it years ago. When I watched it, it sort of went over my head. Yes, I remember the bots and the different things. But I did not really plug myself in. And when I started to understand these things, I didn't go back to watch it because I knew. Mm-hmm. So for me, even watching this one, the new one, the updated version, was a stretch because to me, honestly, and it's not to be rude, it's garbage. And I know, and I'm going to tell you why I say, because of the themes that it's pushing forth. One, it exposes your mind to some other thoughts, and we'll get into that as we progress.
You know, there was an interesting, you know, there are a lot of questions that are raised with Blade Runner, you know, the way that they wrote the script. And there are some things that I think you can pull from between the lines that were created in this movie. Like, there's a much larger universe that was created with Blade Runner, you know, and you only get to see, you know, the Los Angeles portion, you know, on Earth, right? But there's this entire universe that's created. You see, you know, these ideas of grandeur off world, expanding into the stars. It really gives you this idea that there's a lot more going on planet side, but you kind of have the dredge of society stuck here. These are the people that have illnesses and deficiencies where they're not allowed off world. You know, the replicants for the most part were created for off world exploration. One of the things in the process of this is you're kind of introduced to this idea of a much more technologically advanced society. But what was interesting is the themes presented in Blade Runner showed a future where even though technology had increased exponentially, it did not increase the quality of life of those that lived amongst it. It only really increased the quality of life of those that owned the technology. And I think that mm-hmm. also posed questions as we hypothetically look at where we're moving, you know, in sort of this modern day era with increases in technology, especially when you incorporate ideas of cryptocurrency and the blockchain, you know, and everything else that's possible as we advance. Is an increase in technology, does it always lead to the quality of our own individual lives increasing, or does that just add to sort of a technocratic, you know, feudalistic state of control only benefiting those that own the technology itself? And I thought Blade Runner is probably really the only movie I've seen, or at least the earliest movie that I saw that was created, that kind of addressed that question sort of, you know, subconsciously. It was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you look back at some of these movies, you'll see that what's going on in real life, these people still don't have a clue. Until like the second movie, they said that the, you know, basically the internet had crashed. But before I go there, they had voice recognition. They had AI surveillance in HD. And this is what we have today. The cop, he teaches the robot, the female robot, how to have sex. In one scene. I don't know if you noticed that, Jared?
Yeah, yeah, sort of. I remember that scene with her, and I thought that was really, to me, I was actually laughing because my mind's been so fixated on sort of this this ugly, bitter feminism that we see running around, you know, that the forceful way in which he, you know, put hands on her and then, you know, told her how to kiss him. You know, you'd have feminists rioting at the theaters today, but I don't know that I necessarily caught on to he taught her how to have sex, but I noticed that it was very forceful in the relationship and initiating hands-on contact. And that, you know, to me, it, I don't know. It's one of those things where, and maybe I'm getting a little off track, but when I first was dating my wife, you know, I don't know that I asked for permission to kiss her. You know, I just kissed her and she seemed to like it just fine. And today we're in this weird mutual consent phase where we have to sign contracts before we kiss each other. At least that's what stuck out to me in that. It was a real man and a real woman in this engaged in in the beginnings of a relationship. I just thought how different the times are now.
So yeah. And somebody asked if it was Harrison Ford. Yeah, his character basically it was a scene where they were just hanging out and she was looking around his apartment or whatever, and I guess he felt like, you know, I like this fake woman, and he kisses her, and she tries to storm out, and then he grabs her. Well, he doesn't grab her. He stops at the door and stop her from leaving. Then that's when he started to teach her, train her how to interact with a man, because she had never done anything with a person. I can't. You see, these things are so interchangeable with this sort of concept. You know, a person, is it a real person, is it a fake person, whatever. So she didn't have any contact with a real man, or a synthetic one for that matter. These are some of the megacities. The megacities that are always in some of these sci-fi shows. This is all throughout Blade Runner. And you know that if you go to 2050.com or .org, you'll see the plans for the megacities in America, plus over there in the Arab Emirates over there, you'll see that they're building those megacities right now.
Yeah, with plans for like pyramid, like a something that's monstrous, right? That houses like 300,000 people or something.
Right, it's all congested. Sort of like a good benchmark or a good marker is China. The way they have their apartments, very small, compacted, and you know, hundreds or thousands of people live in the same complex. It's just weird. Sort of it goes back to the movie Dread that came out a few years ago.
Yeah,
in that comic book and in that the same megacity kind of concept, but there were more high rises or whatever. So go ahead, say it.
Like animals.
Yeah, they're herded like animals.
They're herded in, from what I saw, and it shows that you had also, and I'm just looking based off of what I remember from the old movie. And this one, very, very densely populated. I think your name is Jared. I can't even remember. I'm sorry. He was saying how as technology advances, people have less. So this, the cop or these people, there is like people on top of people. There is no, you have no basically time by yourself, privacy, time to think. There is no walking in the park. Those things are gone from what we see in the movie.
Yeah, and also a lot of things are legalized. It's not said, but you could see it. Go ahead. Yeah. You're about to say something.
Well, it's just, you know, yeah, that's, I mean, Rory's making a good point. I mean, when I look at the advancement of technology today, you know, and I'm not necessarily the most intellectually equipped to analyze that in probably the most efficient and most accurate way. But I always look to see, okay, how is this going to improve the quality of my life? Or is this going to institute some sort of constraint? And, you know, sometimes technology comes with both pros and cons, you know, and that's to me, technology isn't always a blessing. You know, I don't think like today we live in a time in an era where we have more time saving conveniences than has ever existed. And nobody has any time. You know, so what's the point? You know, so what if I have a microwave and a quesadilla maker and a hot dog roaster and, you know, and a pizza maker and they're all on my countertops next to the toaster? If, you know, they save me all this time, but okay, let's say that I didn't have to go to work to pay for all that stuff. Well, then I could just make toast the old fashioned way. You know, I can enjoy my life more and in a slower pace. Who cares if we've got a coffee maker that makes coffee twice as fast? You know, my question, it always comes down to quality and the quality of life that technology provides. And that's to me, I think it's so important. Sometimes technology creates more hustle and bustle. It doesn't add to the quality of life. In fact, even though today it's, you know, there's a lot of technological advancements that are claiming to add to the quality of life. In reality, it's sort of a cyclical, it's part of a sick system. It's like this Hegelian dialectic. Oh, you don't have time, you need another time saving convenience. And then to pay for that one, you need to spend more time working so you can pay for the next one. And it's this endless cycle. Yeah. And I'm kind of getting to the point where, you know, like in Blade Runner, where you see a very technologically advanced society, but it's spiritually bereft. And everybody's enslaved in some way. I mean, everybody's miserable. They paint the entire, you know, universe that's crafted in sort of this old school noir. You know, it's got this dark, gritty feel to it where it's always raining. There's always some form of precipitation. Yeah. And you have – this is another interesting aspect of this where I really wonder what was happening in the mind of Ridley Scott. you know, he paints this idea that off world, it's the better world, right? And that here on Earth, here everything's bad, right? Everything's dark, everything's twisted to the point where, you know, animals don't even exist. You have this theme that most people miss with the artificial animals, like, for instance, the snake in Blade Runner, where go through this issue of, well, you know, the quality of the craftsmanship of this synthetic snake was bar none, and they could identify who created the snake based on the ID number that was on the scale. And the idea was, well, I wouldn't be here if I could afford a real snake. You know, humanity as a whole has consumed most of the natural resources in this universe. It's forced everybody into these large mega cities, and they've virtually destroyed, you know, all forms of life outside of it. People are hungry. There aren't really any animals. People had never, you know, for instance, you see the owl, you know, Tyrell Industries, you know, you see the owl sitting there. It's very significant that Tyrell himself had an owl. Nobody was able to see animals that were real. You know, later on in 2049, you have this reoccurring theme of, I've never seen a tree before. And the only tree that he got to experience, you know, it's just, it's a sad, dark, they paint the world that's being lived in as a horrible, decrepit, wretched place, which is partly true, and this idea that off-world, it's much more glamorous, but they never show you off-world. It's this sort of ethereal, it leaves it to your imagination as to what's happening outside this small corner of the world.
That is true. A lot of good points there. And so I don't know if there's anything else you want to touch back on. Oh, okay. So as we know, in the first movie, the Harrison Ford and the woman robot, I can't remember her name for some reason, I didn't jot it down. Rachel? Her name is Rachel?
Yeah, Rachel.
And they had sex. And he ends up, depending on which version of the movie you watched, you'll see him driving off somewhere in California. And other versions, they don't show that. But he gets to take her away, because one of the cops, his cop friend, gave him a way out, right? So that's where the second movie transitions to, years later. And I don't know if there's anything else you want to say about the first movie, but I think we covered most of the bases.
Most of it, yeah. I would say this, because I think that Blade Runner 2049 did. You know, one of the reasons why Blade Runner 2049 worked for me was because Blade Runner itself had built a sort of very deep philosophical theme, ultimately asking the question, what does it mean to be human? That seems to me to be the question that Blade Runner posed more than anything else, apart from sort of the universe that it created and the hypotheticals that arose. You saw a theme with pictures. And I think that this theme with the pictures transitioned into 2049 more so because the baby added to this component, but let's set the foundation for what 2049 provided with the birth of this child that was miraculous. And then furthering that question of what does it mean to be human? You had an obsession with the replicants, with the replicants had an obsession with pictures. Do you remember that, Chris?
Yeah.
The replicants always, you know, for instance, he's like, you had the leader say, did you get your precious pictures? You know, it's almost like, you know, I'm not going to agree with the creator's, you know, his conclusions, or at least what he puts forth in this film is what it means to be human. But it seems like he linked the idea of having memories intricately linked to humanity itself. Like, to have memories made you human. To be able to reminisce and look back upon previous experience was something that was fundamental to humanity itself. And you see that theme with the way the replicants always wanted pictures, because the pictures were proof that they were alive. The pictures were symbols of the memories they had, and they cherished them because they had such a short lifespan. Their lives were limited to 4 years, that those pictures were the only thing that cemented their existence. And they were desperate for a legacy. They were desperate for proof of having been an actual person. They were desperate for humanity. And to them, memories are what intricately link them to that sense of humanity. And later on, as you transition into Blade Runner 2049, they add to that with textile touching. You know, for instance, the last scene, you know, they're always touching something in 2049. There was a sensation that went along with the human experience. You know, at the end, he takes all throughout that entire movie, you see Agent K, which was Ryan, what's his name? What's his name in real life?
Joe. They call him Joe on the movie.
Yeah,
the
movie. He was Agent K. His girlfriend called him Joe, but his agent, he was a replicant, so his girlfriend was the only one that gave him a name. He went by K. But I'm trying to remember his name in real life. Anyway,
Ryan Gosling?
Yeah, Ryan Gosling. That's his name, Ryan Gosling. At the very end of that movie, that was the only time he ever took off his gloves, and he was looking at touching a snowflake. See, to him, mm-hmm. part of the human experience was the tactile sensations of the world around him. And they really played that out. He always wore gloves in that film. And between the pictures, whether it was the tactile sensation, even the scene in 2049 where his holographic girlfriend, you know, overlays herself over the prostitute, it was all about physical touch. It was all about embodiment, being able to sense the world around you. Adding to this idea, is that all it takes to be human? And of course, no, it's not. But you can see sort of this weird nihilistic approach to trying to define humanity.
Well,
yes.
Are we on the 2049?
Almost. I forgot a couple of notes that I wrote down here. But he's in the first movie, also some of the replicants were actually having relationships. The main bad guy was having a relationship with his partner. And they were all four of them that came down from the settlements extend their life, but Harrison Ford killed off most of them before they could even reach there, you know. And this I can't even remember his name, my goodness. Anyway, Roy, that's his name, Roy, the murderous one. He and by the end of the movie, he was a little bit more poetic in how he was speaking. He wasn't even trying to kill Harrison Ford anymore. And he realized that he wasn't going to make it to eternal life in such a weird concept for a robot, you know? So it's a lot of weird stuff. I mean, even with Harrison Ford's character, the symbolism of the unicorn, and I didn't dig deep to really find out what that means, but, you know, it usually means something, of course, a magical creature or something to do with the spiritual realm, transitions, you know? Yeah, because about that time, he was thinking about the AI woman, Rachel, a lot. So, yeah. So I guess we could transition now into the other one. Let me just give a little preface here. The second movie, basically the collapse of the whole ecosystem of the world, happened in the mid 2020s, right? And I'm not saying these guys are prophesying or anything, but with all this, all the disasters that are happening, and the way that
the blackout, groups, you're talking about the events in between the film that led to the foundation of 2049, right?
Right. Yeah. It was a whole 10-year blackout. But the whole ecosystem was just messed up. So they had to start doing this synthetic farming. Now, here's the kicker of the synthetic farming now. It was a replicate. Neander Wallace, that's his name? He started the synthetic farming, which took up a lot of land. So it's like these AIs became our gods.
Well,
you know?
All right.
Yeah.
I think the 2045, even before we go into the farming, mm-hmm. we can look at, it's very dark. The movie's extremely dark. And basically it's like a wasteland. And one of the things you touched on before we even go there is the this blackout, this so-called, whatever, it was like a nuclear blast, whatever. This is what I gathered from the movie, was a nuclear blast which basically changed everything. Currencies failed. Everything that we knew that was tangible failed. And as time progressed, we had these replicants that were everywhere. They had taken over. And I think to transition from the first movie to the second movie, the replicants, AI, that you see, they have so much more control of everything. Mm-hmm. They're in every area of life. There is no privacy. As the movie opens, that is evident.
Yeah. You want to say something? Go ahead.
Have you seen there's an anime? I don't know if it's already come out or not, but it's called Blade Runner Blackout 2022. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. No.
Yeah, it's an anime. It was done by a Japanese director that was a big fan. He actually created a short story. I don't know if it's out or not. I've been meaning to check. If it's on Netflix, I'll just have it sent to my house, or I guess maybe I'll have to buy it. I don't know. But yeah, it's supposed to cover the events in the middle. You know, they just went ahead and did an anime short. But yeah, it is interesting. I don't know. You know, at the end of the day, it's just like, you know, no matter what facet of these movies that you're analyzing, it's a type of something. You know, the question is, what's it a type of? You know, like in the scriptures, yeah, when we see parables, you know, and you know, Old Testament themes with Old Testament characters that seem to be a type of Christ. You know, that's the point. It doesn't have to be an exact model of Christ. That's why it's called a type of Christ. You see similarities and sort of precursors to the coming of the Messiah. I look at a lot of these movies the same way. I ask myself, I look at these characters, you know, in Blade Runner 2049, you know, you look at the main female antagonist, you know, her name is Love, L-U-V. And yeah, frequently her creator, right, the big dog in this movie, Jared Leto, he refers to her as the best angel, right? He calls all of these replicants that he's created angels over and over and over again. They refer to as angels. And she's the best one, right? She's the one that stays by his side. She's the one that does the dirty work. And, you know, she's got this complex. She's got a chip on her shoulder because here, even though she doesn't have a 4-year lifespan, right, she's looking at her inability to procreate. And here they're looking at solving that problem by allowing replicants to procreate so they can expand out into the stars infinitely. And in this one, it honestly kind of reminded me of this sort of like hybrid approach, you know, to what we're looking at. You know, the Daniel 2:42 and 43, the you know, the prophecy in Isaiah of the angels, you know, all the stars falling to earth, so to speak, and looking at these ideas of, you know, the final empire having hybrid beings, you know, once again through, you know, Daniel 42:43 laboratory settings, having, you know, angelic DNA and human DNA merging once again, you know, and creating offspring of some sort, having these hybrid beings that in many ways are superior to humanity, that consider themselves to be superior to humanity and ultimately want to take control of creation. And to me, that seemed to be, you know, I can't say that that's really what was going on in 2049, but you look at this sort of passive aggressive behavior that she had, even when she was taking the bones of the specimen that were needed to sort of unlock this genetic anomaly. Yeah. She walks behind Coco, right? And just taps him in the back of the neck. And he's bleeding out of every.
Right.
He's bleeding out of every. She thumped him. You know, she thumped him, and he's bleeding out of every orifice. And I'm like, man, these are. You know, you saw that scene where Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford were in the casino at the end, and the cruisers are coming, and Harrison Ford rounds the corner. Decker, he rounds the corner, running for the vehicle. And where does Ryan Gosling come from? He comes right through the concrete wall. You know, side by side, they show just how vastly different these people are. You know, you have the hybrid creation that is far superior in every respect, except he doesn't have the humanity he desperately wants, you know? And here, and it's just this, to me, I saw hybrid theology all over 2049.
Oh, you're right. Definitely. You're very right. Let's dial it back a little bit more and go back to the first part of the movie. You said a whole bunch, but what I looked at, number one, I think you talked about it's sort of like, I think it's like a metaphor when you look at the movie, Old Testament, New Testament, the first movie versus the second one. And you are looking at the first movie gave you glimpses where these replicants wanted to be like human beings, and the only things that they could do, like you guys said, was look at pictures. Now in the new movie, they had everything up. They had everything, but the problem was the creator could not be the God that he wanted to be, and that's where it is. And I think it was probably about 6 or 8 minutes into the movie, there about he says this, and I'm going to try to quote. He says, you know, I want to have many, many more. Or so. He wants to have many more angels, and I want to go back.
Trillions.
And I want to go back and take over Eden. I want to go back and take over Eden. So this is not, these are not statements that are just being thrown out there. It, you know, Rachel, when you look at Rachel in the Bible, who was Rachel? She was the one that was barren. Rachel was the one that stole her father's idols. And when her father was chased them down, they stopped. And she said to her dad, "Dad, I'm seeing my period. Do you want me to get off this donkey?" And he said, "No, you're good." And then it was her sister Leah was the one who was married first, and then this other woman. So there are so many metaphors that are there. But Rachel, God opened up a womb, and she was able to have an offspring. Just the same way Rachel was able to have an offspring in the movie. And you have this godlike character that would say, you know what? These are my angels. And he would just take a knife and off one of them instantaneously because they cannot reproduce. And that is where the core or the crux of the movie is that, you know what? These replicants need to have a soul. And that's
right. And yes. But yeah. And Jared Leto in real life is like, he's a Satanist, right? But and one of the quotes from him, his character is, "An angel should never enter the kingdom of heaven without a gift."
Yeah, yep. I remember that.
So he really, this is set up to be a godlike character, metaphorically or not, you know? And these are the AI gods, right, that the world is looking towards. Anybody in the chat room, anybody listening today or tomorrow, whenever, look up the AI gods and watch what floods your screen. These people are building AI churches and all these things so that we will be under the control of the self-aware, autonomous, godlike, so to speak, technology.
Well,
the apparatus is being built right now. Go ahead.
Do you remember the quote where he said that, I was going back through, I found a bunch of his quotes because I didn't write them down when I was watching it, but I remember this one stuck out to me more than anything, because when you look at the masters of sort of this world that's being built where we're all considered to be useless eaters, right? Have you ever heard that term written?
Yes.
Eaters, you know, cattle, right? Or disposable. Wallace made a quote. He had a quote in there, Jared Leto. He said, "Every leap of civilization was built on the back of a disposable workforce, but I can only make so many." And that quote just made me so mad because it rings so true. You know, it rings so true to this day. I am considered part of that disposable workforce. This is a philosophy of real elites being, spoon-fed to us in entertainment.
The other thing about it is that,
like you said, you are aggravated by it or annoyed by it. And this is what being put forth so people will actually think the same way. And we are being conditioned right now to accept these things. You know, most people today, they always have a screen in their faces. We have learned to accept something that we keep on ourselves, our cell phone, that we can't live without them now because it has so much of our information. So we basically have an AI with us, and it's already started. We have, I think Android is Bixby and iPhone is, what's the name? I don't know. So we are being conditioned. We've been pushed in that way. It's not, we don't have a hologram yet, but as time goes on, you will see some of these same things coming up.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that too, the hologram, but going back to what Jared was saying, you know, this sort of God AI in this movie, he represents Satan, and Satan can't create life. So, you know, we have the Nephilim and all that, but that's not creating life. You know, so they see this loophole that's in there, and they say, okay, we have to find out what the secret is. We got to find out what the gnosis is. And that's when his helper goes on the murderous tirade to get the information and the bones and all these things to maybe extract DNA or whatever, you know? Because how do you make artificial life that ends up having a baby with a human? How does that happen? I mean, I got a couple of answers to that in the background, but we'll get to that in a minute. So Jared brought up that point. Now, what you just said about the hologram, this is one of the most, all right, the strangest part of this movie was the AI hologram tech that they had in there, the woman, the partner to Ryan Gosling's character, right? Yeah. And it merged with a human being to the AI, the hologram, merged with a real human,
right?
Possessed her body.
Yeah, synced up. Yeah.
Yeah.
They synced up, right?
It's called syncing. Yeah. And then they that in order for her to touch Ryan Gosling's character and have sex with him. And after she was done with the human, she was like, I don't need you anymore. You know? But she wanted that experience, that life experience. You see, Ryan Gosling is more physical, and she's just a see-through character. And they had a tech in there. She, with the hologram technology, you're stuck in one room or stuck in one chamber, whatever it is. And they introduced the technology to have her free roam now. It's called Emanator. Called an emanator. So now she can free roam around, but the central hub for her programming is in his apartment. So that was just a very interesting part of the movie for me. What do you guys think?
Well, I got to tell you, there's one relationship scripturally that no one can replicate, not even a mother and a son or a mother and a daughter. But this thing, like God said, the two shall become one. And that is powerful. That's something that is on a spiritual level. And here it is, we have in this particular movie, that's another bridge that's being crossed where they're saying the young lady or the AI is syncing up with this girl to see what it feels like to be touched, to be held. And not only on her part, but on the, I'm going to say Joe's, on Joe's part, or the officer's part, he's just imagining her in his mind, and he sees her face on this overlay on this this human's body to make love to her. And that is awful when you think about it. You know, here you have an AI that's trying to do the one thing that God said, for this reason, a man should leave his mother and father and the two shall become one in God's eyes. So I look at it a little bit different, and that's just how I saw that part. I'm like, this is nuts.
Mm-hmm. Well, all theories are welcomed here. Anything you got to say about that, Jared?
Well, you know, and I don't know if this has any sort of larger philosophical implication or anything, but this idea of having an AI counterpart, you know, because as you're watching the implementation of their version of this technology being played out on the screen, you know, I got to say, as a millennial myself, you know, growing up in high school, you know, I was first introduced to the eye of an AI. I was introduced to the idea of an AI counterpart in Halo, the video game. You know, because your chief counterpart was Cortana. Cortana lived in a chip that went inside Master Chief's helmet. And throughout this entire game, you know, she's always your sidekick, letting you know what's going on, which way you need to go, you know, doing threat analysis. And I mean, she became the most beloved character in that game, aside from John 117. You know, Cortana was, you know, people daydreamed. You know, as teenagers, how cool would that be to have a Cortana chip, you know, that in my head offering me, companionship and more foresight, you know, with a better brain than the one that I have. To this day, I still find that appealing. to have some sort of personalized computer program that operated as your counterpart throughout the day would be incredibly invaluable. And no, I'm not talking about Siri. That is a very weak version of what I would like. Siri gets on my nerves. But then, you know, you've seen that idea play out in other movies, like with Joaquin Phoenix in Her. He falls in love with a female AI intelligence. I had never seen that movie because it looked too depressing. I need to watch it. But then in this one, you know, they took it to the next level. Here you had a very personal, I mean, she was self-aware, you know, unless it was just the best programming that you've ever seen. And, you know, it just, I think that people are growing more and more comfortable with the idea of non-human companionship long-term. Yep. And that to me is somewhat frightening. And I'm not even going to get into some of the conspiracy theories with AI and what's possible, but they've really conditioned people to believe that creating a non-human human, so to speak, is possible. And I just don't think it is. I think in any way that AI is pushed on us, I don't think we're dealing with a sentient self-conscious being of some sort. If it ever comes off that way, I really, the term demon in the machine comes to mind all the time with AI, because if anything comes out of AI that seems just as personal as a human, it can offer some level of relationship on the same level as a human can. I'm very suspicious because I don't think we have the ability to create a human. For instance, let me put it this way, and I'm kind of going on a rabbit trail, but this is what I'm good at. I'm through the black. I'm at work, right? The other day, and I got this kid. He's a lot younger than I am, and we're working together. And I've been thinking a lot about the idea of, you know, transhumanism and robots replacing, jobs, so to speak. You know, they recently gave a robot citizenship in Australia. People seem to be confused about that. It's so they can build a legal basis to start taxing robots that take human jobs. No one cares if that robot maintains citizenship or not. The government cares if that robot's taxable. You know, so that's the whole goal right now with giving that robot citizenship is building a foundation to start taxing every kiosk that replaces a human worker at a McDonald's. You know, the government knows they're fixing to start losing lots of taxable income. But I'm at work and I'm thinking about robots taking human jobs in the workplace. And my stupid friend Cade, I'm pushing the dolly right through the hospital corridors. My stupid friend Cade looks at me and he says, "Hey, let's play Hannibal Lecter." And I knew exactly what he meant. I said, "Well, get on the dolly." So he gets on the dolly and he stands up on it like Hannibal Lecter, and I'm pushing him down the hall. And all the nurses and the doctors, they're laughing as we go by, and he's making the Hannibal Lecter noises. Long story short, I started sitting there and I started really thinking. I got probably a little too philosophical too quick with that one. And I asked Kate, I said, "You know what's weird?" I said, "As robots continue to take, you know, mundane jobs like what we're doing today, I said, are you ever going to see one robot look at another robot and say, 'Hey, man, let's play Hannibal Lecter. You know, let me get on that dolly and push me down the hallway.'" And I said, "No." He said, "No." He said, "That's funny. I've never thought about that." I said, "Humans are uniquely creative and they goof off in a way that robots never could. There's a way that we're personal together, that we have a sense of humor together. There's a way we act goofy. You know, there's a way we act goofy that you will never see a mechanical object or any sort of software ever able to behave, because we are uniquely created in the image of God. And we bear a lot of those creative attributes as a benefit of that. And I think that as we've pushed this idea of some sort of AI companionship, I do not think that that will ever be able to be replicated outside of something actually personal inhabiting that machine. And that's what terrifies me more than anything in AI, is they've really sold people that somehow, you know, maybe brain emulation is the way to go, if that's possible. I don't know. I don't want to get into the subject of EMs today. But I just don't think that anything that offers any sort of software that's as personal or goofy as a human, I just don't think it can ever be replicated. If it does, be very wary of it, because I don't think it's human at all. And that's what scares me, is people are being they're being programmed to believe it's possible, and I think they're going to be sold something far more sinister without realizing it.
Yep.
Well, I agree, and I disagree to a little bit, just a little bit with you. I agree mostly with you, right? I just look at the Bible in the plain of Shinar, where God said anything they put their mind to won't be impossible. Anything. So in my the way I see this, like, will God let it get that far? You know,
yeah.
I know you don't want to talk about M's, but people out there, the amulets, look it up, We don't want to spend too much time on that because that could get deep, far, and wide. But yeah, I agree with you. But the way that these people are, you know, the guy that owns Sirius Radio, he took whatever configuration of his wife's brain, I don't know, the algorithms or whatever, and he put it into a robot's head. And now he's a transgender, and he talks to this robot. I mean, it's not, it doesn't sound human, but it's supposed to be aspects of her intelligence, right? Mm. How this now in these movies, what are we saying? Especially in this one, is you can't tell them apart. You can't tell them apart. And one of the things is here that and one of the notes I wrote down is AI was using drones to take people out with impunity.
Yeah,
it was a wicked AI. Yes, it was. But they had control over a lot of the drones and would even, you know, hunt down Ryan Gosling. They were obviously in control of the police department because they were going to hunt him down anyway for breaking the law. You know, so these are the realities that are coming to our world. Like not 10 years from now, like right now. I'm talking about the drones and them being controlled by other drones. I brought up an article the other day, but that's not the subject for tonight. But before I go into the real world, is there anything else you guys want to bring up about this movie?
You know, I will. Let me quote one more thing from Wallace that I thought was interesting, because you brought up the idea of the, you know, there was the replicants needing, you know, breeding. And there was a very specific quote in that movie that Wallace makes, which for people that saw the first one and haven't seen the second one, Tyrell Corp went bankrupt essentially and they outlawed and banned the creation of replicants, which is interesting, right? Because you see that. Yeah. You see that in the Old Testament where we had this huge faux pas with the Watchers, right? And then you have sort of this, you know, anybody that knows Genesis 6 knows the story, but we know that it starts up again. We know that this is something that happens again, despite what your own theological beliefs are about a second incursion or whatever it might be. We see the presence of hybrids and things again in the New Testament, at least as far as I'm concerned and what I believe. So here we're in this sort of like New Testament, so to speak, with Blade Runner. And Wallace makes this quote. He says, "And this, the seed that we must change for heaven. I cannot breed them, so help me. I have tried. We need more replicants than can ever be assembled. Millions, so we can be trillions more. We could storm Eden Retaker." You said that already. But it's just that theme, right, of them not being able to breed. He's not able to breed them. I find that interesting. You know, the obviously, you know, most people have hashed this argument out. We're not getting too deep in the whole idea of the sons of God. But the sons of God, you know, just because these angels in the New Testament that aren't given to each other in marriage, it doesn't mean they can't breed, obviously, because in Genesis chapter 6, they had offspring with women, but you never see them having offspring with each other, you know, and that's what's interesting, and that's led to a lot of different debates. Mm-hmm. But here, you have that specifically mentioned, that he cannot breed them. It took a human right, getting involved in the breeding process for it to happen.
Yeah, very, very important part, points there. And we're going to get into all that in a second. You just watch me. Rory, anything else to end on as far as the movie?
I think there's more to come, but I think the movie left people. There's something else. Sure, that was in that movie. The lead officer, the lead officer, the lady that was in that movie.
Yeah.
She knew all along what this gentleman was doing, and she wanted to protect him. And that's why she did not give any information. So she knew exactly where he was, because he was also watching. And you also saw in that movie where all roads or everything that is any type of AI, any type of let me see what I'm saying. Any type of government official, anybody, they all go back to the one source, to that master. He's the one that's pulling the chains behind everything, because the cop is there. The cop seems to be upholding the law, but in all in truth and fact, she knew who killed Coco. She knew what was going on. And, you know, nothing was ever done. Nothing was done about those things. Right. So it was just a figurehead. Right. And I looked at that and I said, wow, well, you knew all along what was going on. And, you know, before she was killed, she knew what was going to happen. And she said, no, I'm not telling you where he is. And, you know, so that's one thing I wanted to touch on. The other is that we see now where the heart of man is in this movie. And I'm saying the heart of man, well, this director, what he's trying to portray. And these movies are not just something that to blow over. They're very deep. They're very profound. And there's a lot of thought behind it. You said something earlier, Chris, when you were watching the first Blade Runner, you said, how did these guys know what was going to come in the future? You know, we know in other countries now they have these brothels with sex bots in there. And so these things are out there and they're actually happening. But remember, there's a part in scripture. It says, you know what? These men humanity at the time was, they're all one accord and they were going towards this thing so hard. I think it was on the plain of Shinar. God said, let's go down and confound their language. And we are seeing again where now men are putting these things in movies, these images. Images are powerful. They put them in movies. And you know what? Look, we're looking back and say, oh, yeah, well, we have that today. That's here. Look, we have that. We're talking about AIs now. We have drones that are doing surveillance now. We have drones that can actually do this all by themselves today. These are things that we have.
Yeah.
But years ago, we never had these things. So, you know, we are looking basically at the future. And, you know, day in, day out, when you look at the movie, we're seeing that these bots, these replicants, are becoming more and more real. And I like, I think it was both of you were saying about them wanting to be able to touch, to feel the different sensations that us as human beings have. And I think this is what God has given to us. This is what God gave us. That is so powerful. But at the same time, these are the things that are being diminished in the movie. And it's looking like we're putting these robots, you know, lifting up higher. And you see it's sort of like the humanity is going down and the robots are coming up. That's my
take. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting talking about the tactile sensation and the emphasis on touching things in this movie, because even Wallace himself was blind. He required augmented technology in every scene where he would engage with something, he would have to touch it. And then he would have his little drones move. So even in this case, it was something they focused on even with him. Hey, Chris, I've only got about 10 minutes left before I've got some other obligations I've got to attend to. But I just wanted to tell you right now that I appreciate you having me on tonight, because I love getting weird talking about this stuff, man. It's such a blast. I just wish I had more time to do it all the time.
All right. I mean, if you have to go, I mean, we only got a few minutes left anyway. Just want to go through a few more articles.
Like I said, I got like 10 minutes. So let's do whatever you want. Okay. I just want to give you a heads up before I bounce. So okay. I got like 10 minutes.
All right. Okay, here we go. Let me share this here, present to everyone. Can you see my screen?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a show called Humans. If you want to check it out, whoever's out there, check it out. This exemplifies the same thing that Blade Runner does, right? And this isn't the shocker of the night. This is just a show I'm letting you know about. Now, think about this. Making realistic skins for robots. Without realistic synthetic skin, robots will never be entirely accepted socially. Yet even measuring what it means for skin to be human-like is proving tough. This is 2009. Now watch what's happening, right? Oxford scientists are building robots that wear artificial skin before it's transplanted. This is March 2017. So it's not seeming that much difficult now anymore, is it? Right? Here's another one. Robots and humans will have babies and create a new hybrid species in the next 100 years, claim experts. And we know that 100 years number is, you see this, all right, let me read it a little bit. AI robots could soon be having children with their owners, according to a leading artificial intelligence expert, Dr. David Levy, author of Love and Sex with Robots, claims that it is in high odds answer that humans and robots will soon make babies, given recent progress in stem cell research and artificial chromosomes. Okay, if you look at, this is the article, look what's in his lap. I mean, look what's beside him.
This dude's a freak. I've read about this guy. This whole...
Okay, you see that, right? Anybody getting freaked out about this stuff here?
Just that hand on the leg is enough to curdle my blood.
Yeah, and they're trying to make this as real as possible. Like I said, I don't know how far God will let this go, but this is what the movies present to you. Sex robot shock, AI robots, AI bots will soon be able to give birth to children.
Yeah,
this is an abomination. My daughter asked me today, she asked me, if that happened, will they be able to go to heaven or not? I said, look, it's an abomination.
Oh, God, have a soul.
You know? So this is where we can end the show. this is just funny to me, man. But sad at the same time, right? Because this is where our world is going to. The heart of man is desperately wicked. Who can know it? That's straight out of the Bible. Who can know it, right? Now, I want to thank you for coming on, Jared. And I just want to say, Jared and Tom will be on February 6th to talk about the movie Split. The movie Split. And also, on March 6th, we're having our buddy Chad come in. This is his book. If you can see it there. It's his book. We're going to be talking about this book, The Bondage of Egypt. And you want to stay tuned for that. I'm not sure if it's going to be live or pre-recorded, but whatever.
I hope you like the word arch. I hope you like the word arch and arches, because he's going to say it a lot. In fact, you should just have a little clicker and just count how many times he says the word arch.
For sure. Yeah, man. So thanks, everybody, for coming. And this is our movie review of Blade Runner. It's usually more scripted, but hey, guess what? This is live and this was fun. So guess what? Join us later and don't let them burn.